Now, White Sox Weekly, the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball.
Get the fireworks ready.
White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890.
Well, welcome into White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. We got 2 hours of fun with you before we get going with the pregame show for the Orioles and White Sox. Pair of Dylans on the mound this afternoon. Dylan Covey and Dylan Bundy on the hill as the White Sox and Orioles get going for game two of a three-game set. Good afternoon and welcome into the show. Lots to do this afternoon, lots to talk about. We're getting close to a number of different, milestones throughout the season. We finished our first month of the year, coming up on a couple of deadlines that maybe you've heard of, maybe you've been looking forward to, and maybe I would imagine, well, let's be honest, I would imagine a number of White Sox fans have been looking forward to this month of May because of what it may, in fact, bring for the White Sox. We'll see. We'll talk quite a bit about it. We've got, here's what's going on the show today. Dane Dunning, who has had a lights-out run through low A ball and just got called up to high A ball, is going to join us probably about 4:30 or so. We'll talk to Dane and see what he's been up to in the minor leagues and what's been the secret to his success. I'm sure he'll give it in great detail, just give away all his secrets. We'll also talk with WLS's own Kat Garcia. She'll join us after the 4 o'clock news. She's got her latest piece out on Tommy Kahnle and the White Sox bullpen and just how good it's been to start this season. Right about 5 o'clock, we'll talk to Dan Hayes of CSN Chicago. He'll have just spoken with Ricky Renteria about what seems to be a new look to the White Sox lineup. We'll see if that's going to be a relatively permanent thing, if that's going to be just somewhat of a downshift or change in gears for the White Sox. We've always got our news and notes segment. We got the mailbag we'll dive into. You guys have been real active in throwing a bunch of questions our way on Twitter. At C1 McKnight is the Twitter handle if you want to leave questions or thoughts or comments or whatnot in the mailbag. That's how you do it. You can also get at us here on the show, 312-591-8900. That's the phone number here for White Sox Weekly, 312-591-8900. We'll also get you a very in-depth and detailed minor league report because it's no secret that in a few days here, the number comes up, at least the first one, for Yoan Moncada. We'll talk a bit about his success down in AAA. We'll talk about the idea, the prospects, the philosophy behind calling him up or not calling him up, whether he's ready, whether he's not, all that good stuff, because it's been real interesting to watch. That's coming up a bit later in the show. Want to deal with a couple things news-wise for the White Sox before we start, of course. And White Sox Charities invites fans to celebrate over 25 years of giving with $25 for 25. Donate 25 bucks or more on May 10th and 11th with the chance to win White Sox prizes, including autographed items and experiences. For more information and to participate, visit whitesox.com/25. That's whitesox.com/25. So a few pieces of news that we found out, mostly about the pitching for the White Sox as they left Kansas City and headed into Baltimore last night. Kind of a weird, crazy little ball game last night. We'll hear from Miguel Gonzalez after that game. He was pitching against his old club in Baltimore for the first time. He had thrown against them before with the White Sox, of course, but this was the first time to go back to Camden Yards and throw where he was, brought up into the major leagues, an organization that stuck with him for quite some time before, frankly, let him go for pretty strange reasons. The Orioles were hurting for starting pitching last season, and Miguel certainly would have done well for them. He was fantastic for the White Sox and has been off to a pretty good start this year. It's kind of a bonkers ball game. What with Wade Miley getting hit twice last night by line drives, Jose Abreu and Aviciel Garcia both hitting him with comebackers. He left the game, and then Gabriel Ochoa comes out of nowhere and throws six shutout innings for the Orioles. White Sox threatened really all night long, especially into the eighth and ninth, nearly tied that ball game up, but were unable to do so. So they dropped the first one against the Orioles. We'll hear, like I said, from Miguel Gonzalez in a couple minutes right after the first break here in a few. But what has affected the Sox, and I suppose the biggest pieces of news, has been the latest injury into the White Sox bullpen and really the arms. It's kind of remarkable. The fact that there are five starting arms, top-tier kind of guys, bullpen and rotation, that are now on the disabled list for the White Sox, and still they continue to pitch as well as they have. That's a credit to first and foremost, it's a credit to the guys who were brought into this club from the get-go to start the season. It's a credit to guys who had their number called, whether that's Tommy Kahnle, who, you know, technically wasn't with the White Sox to start the season, but didn't pitch any in AAA either. He was called up the day that AAA Charlotte started their season and has done nothing but strikeout hitters since. Anthony Swarzak, a non-roster invitee, has stepped up and given the White Sox some much-needed length in the bullpen, what with Patricia, Putnam, and now Nate Jones all going down. James Shields is on the disabled list, and it sounds like he'll miss probably another start. The timetable for him was kind of downshifted some. The lat's just not quite responding to where to some of the rehab and the throwing program. Not the rehab necessarily, the throwing program that the White Sox had him on. So it looks like Mike Pelfrey, who has been fairly serviceable in his couple of starts, kept you in ballgames more or less. And that's really what you can ask for a guy who's, I guess, sixth on that rotation or seventh in that rotation. And the White Sox have stated a number of times that they don't feel it would be appropriate or fair even to the arms that they do have, those top prospect arms, guys like Reynaldo Lopez, guys like Lucas Giolito, like Carson Fulmer, the list goes on, to bring them up and throw them into what could be just a temporary situation. So with the injury to Nate Jones now, those later innings, and I talked with Don Cooper about this on the White Sox pregame show last night, those arms who were surprises to start the season, your Kahnle, your Swarzak, that kind of idea, they're pushed into, I think, probably some more high-leverage roles. And I don't know if it's necessarily something that you only see with a team where the White Sox are, you know, choosing to kind of make this rebuild happen, acquiring young talent, all that kind of stuff. But you find some roster spots that you're able to give to, I don't want to say flyers because that just dismisses so much of the player's work, but I feel like you get the idea. You get a chance to give those roster spots to guys like Tommy Kahnle, Anthony Swarzak, or what have you. They get to show off the mechanical changes in the case of Tommy Kahnle, or the pitch selection changes in a case of Anthony Swarzak throwing the slider so much more than the fastball that he had thrown over most of his career, even as a starter going back to the Minnesota Twins, and you get to see the success. Now, hopefully that stays strong. Hopefully they're able to pitch in those high-leverage spots, because it certainly seems like the White Sox will need to lean on them in some of those places. And, of course, you have David Robertson at the back of the bullpen, who's having as good a start to his season as you could probably ask, too. Did blow one save, but came back to throw two innings, and in that ball game, we come to find out, and general manager Rick Hahn kind of told beat reporters this the other day when they announced Jones was going on the disabled list. That day when Robertson had to go out and throw two innings, the White Sox were trying to stay away from Nate Jones because he was, you know, starting to feel it a little bit in that elbow. Those are the kind of notes that we'll start with here. We'll hear from Miguel Gonzalez when we get back from a quick break. 312-591-8900 is the phone number here on White Sox Weekly. Want to know what you've thought from the White Sox over their last week or so of play, because we've seen, and we'll get to the lineup for tonight in a few minutes as well, we've seen a couple of different machinations of the lineup. We've seen a couple of different ways that Ricky Renteria has thrown guys out there. And whether that's because of need with Todd Frazier going down with a little bit of a back injury for a while, whether that's because he's trying to mix up some spots for Cody Ashe and Matt Davidson to get into the ballgame, whether that's there have been a number of different things, the send-down of Jacob May and the call-up of Willie Garcia, the three Garcias outfield. We've seen a couple of different things, and I wonder what's been, I don't know, working for you. What have you liked out of the lineup, out of the ways that Ricky has changed it some? And I suppose maybe I got to give you tonight's lineup before you really have a handle on that. And we'll do that in a couple of minutes after we hear from Miguel Gonzalez. You've got the phone number at 312-591-8900. You have the Twitter handle, too, at C1McKnight. I'm Connor. This is White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890.
John and Ray back Monday morning, but this weekend, check out the John and Ray in 60 podcast.
John and Ray in 60, downloaded at WLSAM.com. Clear, concise, fun.
WLS AM 890.
If you want to bring your little all-star closer to the game, fans 13 and under can join the White Sox Kids Club for special Kids Club giveaways, free White Sox tickets, and exclusive events. Head to whitesox.com/kidsclub today to join. I'm Connor McKnight. You've got White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. We've got White Sox baseball coming up at 6:05. Pregame show starts at, let's see, what does that do then? 5:30, we'll begin the pregame show. And you've got White Sox Weekly up until then. About 4:05, we'll talk with Kat Garcia of WLS. She's got her latest article out on Tommy Kahnle and the bullpen, which will be asked to perform the way it has been for. I almost said it'll ask to do more. It's going to be asked to do exactly what it has been doing, and that's give up, you know, frankly, zero runs and not allow inherited runners to score and be nails with runners in scoring. The whole thing, that's what it's going to be asked to do, but it'll be asked to do it without Nate Jones now. He's got some elbow neuritis, I guess, in his elbow. Well, I don't guess that's what it is. I don't know what it is necessarily. It's elbow neuritis is the issue. Keep him out about 2 weeks or so. The White Sox are fairly optimistic, I guess, that his return could be in about two, so hopefully they won't be out without his services for as long. Meanwhile, Miguel Gonzalez last night was admittedly a little amped, a little maybe more juiced than he should have been coming out in the first, or could have been, I suppose, coming out in the first against his old squad and pitching in Camden for the first time as a member of the White Sox against his old ball club. He went 6 2/3, gave up 6 hits, 2 runs, 2 earned, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts, did give up the 1 home run to Chris Davis. It was a pitch that was up and over the middle, and you can't do that to Chris Davis. Miguel knows that as well as anybody, but struggled in the first and worked around some problems later on. Was frankly vintage Miguel Gonzalez. He talked a bit about his start after last night's game. Wanted to bring it to you today.
Bittersweet situation. You know, I understand that coming back in at Camden Yards, the fans were happy to see me. I just went out there and had fun. And that was it.
You feel pretty good?
Yeah, felt good for the most part. The first inning, I got myself into trouble. You know, threw 30 pitches. Other than that, settled down after that. It was fine. Oh yeah, there was a lot of adrenaline going on for sure. That first inning, there's some emotion and. It was, that's why I felt like a little too much amped up, but settled down after that. Second inning was better. You tipped your hat to Chris Davis, a homer he hit, splitty. I mean, they're going to battle no matter what. You know, I was able to make some pitches when I needed to and got out of some jams. You know, the bad thing about it was you know, we lost the game. We lost the game. We come back tomorrow and try to win one. And this is where I started my career in the big leagues, and you know the Orioles gave me the opportunity. But you know now I'm with the White Sox and I'm doing a good job. I'm happy to be here. My teammates are great, and we're in a good spot right now. I know that the Orioles have a good offense, and to be able to minimize damage in a couple of the innings, bases loaded. Getting out of it was huge. It's a crazy game. You know, we hit 12 hits. We got 12 hits, and we lost the game. The guys were out there battling. Things didn't go our way. Keep working. Keep doing our thing, and we'll be all right.
I think this White Sox club has a lot of confidence that they can bounce back from game to game, and they can bounce back in games, too. I think it probably was a little frustrating to have a guy come out in relief like Gabriel Ynoa did, a guy who was just up from AAA, a guy who had a 6.65 ERA in AAA up until he came up yesterday, and then do what he did, 6 innings, a shutout ball. You got some hits, the White Sox did. I don't know if you know, just chalk this one up to hit sequencing and the BABIP gods, or if you... you know, have a longer look at it. I tend to think it's maybe more of a, well, burn the tape, move on, get yourself some quality at-bats today against Dylan Bundy if you can. Bundy has had, and we'll talk about this a little bit later in the show too, Bundy has looked incredibly good. Apparently, Dylan Bundy is now allowed to throw his, it's a cutter slider kind of thing pitch
that the Baltimore Orioles had kind of told him to not throw after early Tommy John surgery in his history. Anyway, maybe you're getting all of Bundy now, or the Orioles are, and we'll see how much of Bundy the White Sox can get this afternoon. That was Miguel Gonzalez, who certainly did a pretty good job last night against his old team. Ricky Renteria has changed the lineup some for the White Sox tonight. And I wanted to get to it now because I think we'll talk about it some with Kat Garcia on the other side of the 4 o'clock news. I want to talk about it with you as well. 312-591-8900 is the phone number. Melky Cabrera is in the leadoff spot. Lourie Garcia is batting two. So right there off the top, you have Lurie batting as high as he's hit in the lineup all year long. He had been creeping up very slowly. Last night it was, the final game against the Royals, he was batting five. Of course, the White Sox were without Todd Frazier in that game. Night before, last night, he was batting nine. And I think, you know, given the power that you've seen out of Lourie Garcia, I mean, I'm not saying he's a 600 slugger or anything like that, but he's plugged some doubles and given you some good at-bats, has a little speed, seems like he's pretty willing to lay down a bunt. Maybe, you know, Ricky Renteria and he need to work out exactly when those bunts need to be put down, but certainly willing and able to do it. So it's Melky and Lurie, your two switch hitters in the lineup right there at one and two. Jose Abreu, three. Avi Garcia, four. Todd Frazier, five at third base. And a lot of the conversation, and we'll likely bring this up with Dan Hayes of CSN Chicago, about 5 o'clock or so. That's when we'll get to Dan after he's, and the beat reporters have talked to Ricky this afternoon. There had been some hesitance, I guess, from Ricky Renteria about moving Avi Garcia, even given the incredible start he'd had to the year, up in the lineup. Whether that was because he was worried about some pressure that Avi might put on himself, whether it be because he's announcing something, whatever it happens to be. Well, Avi's been up there in the lineup the last two nights, batting four. And again, without Todd Frazier, the move was kind of, I don't know, cloaked some. You know, you didn't have to make any kind of announcement or pronouncement about it. It was just Todd's out, Avi's up. And I think that's a good thing, to be quite honest with you, because now he's had a couple of nights in that spot. Whatever kind of anxiety, if there is any, if there's not, I don't know. It seemed as though Ricky was thinking about it. That seems to be out of the way now, and if he needs to be there in that lineup, and if indeed his production stays where it has been, why not? Abreu, Garcia, and Frazier, 3, 4, and 5. Cody Ashe gets a look tonight, DHing, hitting left, batting 6, right behind Frazier. Tim Anderson is in the 7 spot tonight. And that's kind of the flip side of this, moving Lourie Garcia up. It's Tim Anderson moving down. We'll get to more of the lineup in just a couple of minutes here after the 4 o'clock news. We'll also talk with Dane Dunning a little bit later on in the show, and Kat Garcia is going to join us as well. I realize I stopped at 7 for some reason in the lineup. There are 9 hitters in a baseball lineup, not 7. I apologize. There are 2 more. Omar Narvaez is batting 8 and catching tonight. Yolmer Sanchez is the 9 hitter, a switch hitter at second base. Yolmer's been somewhat impressive to start the season, too. You talk about two guys in Lurie and Yolmer, both switch hitters, both smaller dudes, but both with still a little bit of pop, able to drive the ball from gap to gap a little bit as well. Yolmer, of course, said that 3-run shot in Yankee Stadium to the opposite field that was, well, majestic. Good stuff. Not Aaron Judge or anything, but who is? 312-591-8900 is the phone number. I'm Connor McKnight. We'll talk with Kat Garcia of WLS. She covers the White Sox next on WLS AM 890.
White Sox Weekly, the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball.
Get the fireworks ready.
White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890.
Welcome back into White Sox Weekly. We got baseball for you coming up this evening, but another hour and a half to hang out with you. Plenty of time to get to a bunch of things White Sox. Coming on down the line, we'll talk to high A pitcher Dane Dunning right about 4:35. He's the guy in the White Sox system you may have heard of. He's striking out just about everybody he looks at. We'll do the news and notes segment. We'll get you caught up with the mailbag. We'll do a minor league report as well. We'll talk with Dan Hayes of CSN Chicago right after Ricky Renteria has spoken to reporters. So that's something about 5 o'clock-ish. something like that. We're flexible here on White Sox Weekly. We'll also get a chance to talk with Kat Garcia of WLS. She writes the column there on the White Sox. And her latest is on Tommy Canley and the ridiculous numbers that Tommy Canley has thrown up in the first month or so of the season. Kat, good to talk with you. Read the piece, and Tommy just seems like a man possessed in the first couple weeks here.
Yeah, he's been absolutely incredible. I mean, he's made a couple mechanical tweaks, and he seems to really have found his command. And with that sometimes triple-digit fastball that he has, if he continues to pitch the way he has been, he's going to be a really valuable piece for the White Sox bullpen.
Have you seen, you know, when we go from guys who can't find the strike zone, whether it's relievers or whether it's starter or something like that, does he remind you of somebody that you've seen kind of find it and have it click for him before? Whether it's a starter, I don't even care if it's lefty, righty, that kind of, or even if it's, I mean, I guess typically those guys who can't find it are big time velocity guys, but I wonder if there's somebody similar in your mind that Tommy kind of screams out for you.
Actually, it's interesting because on the other side of town, Hector Rondon, you know, before he went on the DL last year, and now he's had, obviously, seen a variety of issues. But before that, he was definitely the same type of situation where something just clicked for him, and he had that fastball that was really a good, you know, high-velocity pitch for him. And that's something that I would say is similar with Conley.
Hmm. Does the velocity, I don't know, does that worry you some? Is there a bad flip side to that coin, being a guy that throws that hard that needs the mechanical changes to stay as intact as Canley's been to start the season?
It, you know, velocity is always something that you worry about. You know, you see with guys like Aroldis Chapman, it's really hasn't been an issue. There hasn't been an injury there.
That's true.
But with a guy like Conley, you see him throwing that 90-mile-an-hour slider, and anyone who brings the kind of velocity that he does is going to worry you. Unfortunately, you just kind of have to work and just see where that takes them. But the White Sox are really great at keeping their pitchers healthy. So that's something that I think we don't have to worry about too much.
Yeah, I mean, this season has been kind of the outlier, I guess, in pitcher health for the White Sox. They've got a number on the disabled list, and that, I guess, that means that a guy like Canley, that a guy like Anthony Swarzak are going to have to move up in terms of high leverage outings. It seems, though, that, you know, you're pretty high, at least reading the column on WLSAM.com/White Sox. You can find all the Cat stuff there. It seems like you're pretty high on him being able to make this a consistent fix, that this isn't exactly flash in the pan that would lead you to be worried about Tommy moving into some of those higher leverage innings.
Right. Obviously, we've seen in the past throughout baseball, relievers are very up and down. You know, you really can't predict them for too long of a time, unless there are those guys like Chapman that just stick. But the thing is with Conley is that he's made mechanical changes. This doesn't seem like a lot of luck necessarily, like we've seen with some pitchers. It's not as if things are just going his way all the time. These seem to be a solid foundation, these changes that he's made to kind of build a future on.
Well, and when we talk about luck, so much of it is just, you know, balls in play and just, you know, being hit at all. I mean, that's the tenet, I guess, of it. Once the ball leaves the hand, there's nothing you can do to keep it from being a hit or not a hit, except for striking guys out. And the strikeouts have been so high that I would imagine that's kind of what you're looking at to control for luck, right?
Right, absolutely, because when a ball is in play, we've seen that it's up to the defense. Obviously, the type of ball that's hit, whether it be a ground ball or a fly ball and how hard it's hit, is, you know, those are things that a pitcher can sort of control for. But with Conley, obviously, we've seen his strikeouts are incredible. It's because he's throwing that fastball just right by hitters. And I think that's going to be really great for him if he can continue to command that fastball.
What's your philosophy? Talking with Kat Garcia here of WLS on White Sox Weekly on WLS. What's your philosophy on lineup construction? Do you care about it? Does it matter to you a whole lot? Do you fret about where guys are hitting in the lineup on a day-to-day basis?
I mean, not to get too statistical here, but...
No, I don't mind. Let's do it. Let's get weird.
There is a very, very slight chance that lineup construction really affects the outcome of a team's game, season, really anything. So hitting, I know that the new White Sox lineup came out hitting Melky at the top and moving Anderson down. Mm-hmm. That's just something that I think is going to be interesting to see what the results are. Obviously, we know that lineup construction matters in the terms of, you know, where a guy is hitting may make his production a little higher if it doesn't necessarily affect the team as much. But there's going to be less pressure on Anderson in that bottom of the lineup spot. So for the players personally, I think it really helps them. The team necessarily, I'm not sure that has that much of an outcome on.
Yeah, I've always thought it's a weird place to be to try and justify, you know, these season-long looks we have at baseball where, yeah, lineup construct, it doesn't matter, and it's 162 games and it all kind of comes out in the wash. And yet, whether it's maybe not specifically Tim, you know, batting a little bit farther down in the lineup today or whatever, maybe there's a player who, you know, likes hitting behind this guy because X, Y, and Z. You know, there are the human factors that we get to find within these massive amounts of statistical data, and I kind of see lineups as being one of those. I wonder, though, you know, when you start to move, and I think, you know, Ricky Renteria has mentioned this a couple of times, you start to move a guy like Avisel Garcia up, who's been so good in the first 5-6 weeks of the season, that you're not asking a guy, because of a lineup spot, to do anything different than he's been doing.
Right. I think it's more the pressure that being in a certain spot of the lineup puts on a player mentally. Mm. Even though, you know, we're saying all this stuff about how it doesn't really matter, baseball is a very traditional game, and we know that certain spots in the lineup mean certain things, and that brings a different mentality to a player when they're in those spots. I think moving a guy lower is no longer considered necessarily a bad thing. We've seen Joe Maddon use players in the lower spots of the batting order. And I think it's kind of changing throughout the game, the way that where you're placed in the lineup is perceived.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the way, you know, the Indians will kind of construct their lineup from day to day. I mean, they have, I think they have got such a luxury in that Carlos Santana is a leadoff hitter for them when, you know, he is not your prototypical or archetypical leadoff hitter by any. I mean, no one has seen a leadoff. If we're looking at, like, baseball in the 1960s or 70s, no leadoff hitter has ever looked like Carlos Santana has looked.
Right, exactly. And not to continue bringing up the Cubs, but the same thing is with Schwarber in the top of the lineup. I mean, he's typically someone that you regard as a power hitter. He's a bigger guy. He's not necessarily as fast as the typical leadoff hitter would be. But you see guys like that making it into the top of the lineup, and I think we're seeing a real change in how, like I said, a lineup construction is perceived in this game.
Yeah, Melky's in there today for the White Sox in the top spot. We'll see how that goes and perhaps how long that lasts. Kat, really appreciate you hopping on. As always, we'll talk to you next week.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
You got it. That's Kat Garcia here on White Sox Weekly. You can read her latest. It's mostly all about Tommy Canley. We just figured we'd talk a little bit about the lineup because it's a different looking 1-9 for the White Sox this evening against the Orioles. I don't know that I've seen anything quite like it so far this year. And want to know what you think about it. 312-591-8900 is the phone number. 312-591-8900. Sox fans, you can join us as the White Sox take on the San Diego Padres on Saturday, May 13th at 6:10 p.m. The first 20,000 fans will receive a Hawk Harrelson alarm clock presented by Total Lubricants. Visit WhiteSox.com to purchase your tickets today. I don't know if you've seen, MLB Network did, well, the Sox with MLB Network did their ad for the Hawk Harrelson alarm clock. Dan Plesac is in it. Hawk's hysterical. Plesac's way. It's great. You got to get yourself an alarm clock, too. I know that's going to be difficult. That's going to be really tough. What is that? Hold on, I threw the read away. The first 20,000 fans. Wow, that's a lot of alarm clocks. You have a really good chance of getting one if you get out to the ballpark early enough. That's May 13th. Saturday, May 13th, the first 20,000 fans get an alarm clock. I'm Connor McKnight. You've got White Sox Weekly. We will take a quick break here, and then when we come back, we'll do the minor league report. There's a lot to get to. A lot to get to in the minor league report next on White Sox Weekly. You've got WLS AM 890.
What the hell's going on out here?
White Sox Weekly Farm Report.
We need a live rooster to take the curse off Jose's glove, and nobody seems to know what to get Millie or Jimmy for their wedding present.
Candlesticks always make a nice gift, and maybe we can find out where she's registered, maybe a place setting or maybe a silverware pattern.
On WLS AM 890.
Okay, let's get to it.
MLB.TV Premium is back and better than ever. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live on over 400 supported devices. Plus, get a free subscription to At-Bat Premium, the number one app for live baseball. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.TV for details. I was using the At-Bat app just last night. I was showing some of my friends the Wade Miley stuff, that the White Sox hit him twice and knocked him out of the ball. It was crazy. I've never quite seen anything like it. Neither had they, and I used the At-Bat app to show them. It was kind of cool. They had been, they hadn't been watching the White Sox game. They'd been doing other things, but they were sad that they'd missed the White Sox game. That's for darn sure. Got to get to the minor league report. We do this every single White Sox weekly. And really, we try and keep you up to date and abreast of what's going on with some of the big-time prospects in the White Sox system, and even some of the guys, especially some of the guys that you hadn't heard of, because how else are you going to hear of them if we don't tell you about them? That's the whole process. This one, though, we'll stick to some of the big names, and this is kind of a double-edged sword. I'm going to go through some of the things that these prospects have done, and then we'll talk about some of the larger, philosophical attachments to guys like Yoan Moncada, because a couple of people asked questions about him and about perhaps calling him up in the mailbag, so we'll do that then. We'll start with this. Moncada's been great. I mean, he's been fantastic. His hit streak now goes to 11 games. He had a pair of knocks last night in a Charlotte loss to the Gwinnett Braves, 5-4 in 9 innings. He's 19 for 45, Yoan Moncada is, over that stretch. That's a .423 batting average, so he's not just dropping one in every here and there. He does have 32 strikeouts and 101 at-bats. So that's, something about that 30% strikeout rate. And that's, you'd like to see it below that. Or at least that's kind of a number, a rule of thumb kind of number that I think a lot of people in evaluating prospects are kind of looking for. And that's just from a, supply and demand curve kind of thing. You want to sink that below so that the value you're providing is above that. I wrote down some of the rankings that he's been putting up in the International League so far. Bear with me here. It's a lot of numbers, but they're all pretty superlative. So he's first in runs scored at 22nd. He is second in hits with 35. He's tied for third in home runs with 5. He's tied for third in total bases with 54. He's tied for sixth in walks. So even though he's got the 32 strikeouts, 13 walks, and 101 at-bats isn't all that shabby. He's tied for sixth in strikeouts with 32. So it has been a lot of swing and miss for Yoan Moncada. But fortunately or unfortunately, either way you want to look at it, that has kind of been built into his profile. It wasn't an unknown thing. Fifth in on-base percentage, .421. Seventh in slugging percentage in .535. Third in average at .347 and fourth in OPS at .956. It has been a darn good first 4 weeks for Yoan Moncada in AAA. Going through some of the other prospects here, and we'll get to more probably in the mailbag. We'll finish this out here because we're up against the news. Zach Collins has walked a ton down in Winston-Salem. Contact issues for Collins some, though I think of all of the issues that you could kind of have as a ball player, especially with Collins' profile, the contact ones, I guess, are the ones you kind of go, okay, there's probably a little bit of bad luck there, probably a little bit of lower-level umpiring, and he's got a pretty good eye, and maybe just being a little bit more selective, too selective for his own good. Still a .205 batting average and a .379 on-base percentage. He's got 23 walks in 78 at-bats. Luis Alexander Basabe is quietly putting together a pretty good debut as well in the White Sox system. Had an injury that kept him back a little bit, but a .256, .322, .390 slash line isn't so bad for a guy who's playing the most advanced ball he's played. Back up to AAA, where we find Nicky Delmonico, 24-year-old corner guy for the White Sox, is having a great season too. .304, .471, .366, and we'll talk about Delmonico some in the mailbag because he's been asked about quite a bit as well. Tonight in AAA, Reynaldo Lopez gets the start. Spencer Adams goes in AA and High A. We'll see Daniel McGrath throw. We'll talk with Dane Dunning right after the 4:30 news.
He's been absolutely fantastic in low A and has been moved up to high A. He'll make his second high A start for the Winston-Salem Dash tomorrow night. They've had a bunch of rainouts that have moved the schedule around. Talked with Dane, though. He will indeed start tomorrow night. Five innings pitched so far in high A, five strikeouts, 26 innings thrown in low A, 33 strikeouts. He's been just an absolute monster and a ton of fun to watch. He got picked up in the Adam Eaton deal over this last offseason, and we will talk to him next. News at 4:30. Dane Dunning after that. This is White Sox Weekly on WLS AMA 90.